Floating. I'm Katrina Kubicek. I am from Children's Hospital Los Angeles as well, a different group, the Community Health Outcomes Intervention Research Program. And I'm presenting today on some research that's been conducted over the past couple years looking at intimate partner violence among young men who have sex with men in Los Angeles. It's a project that was funded by the California HIV/AIDS Research Program. And the data that I'm reporting on today is primarily qualitative. It is a mixed method study, but these are some newer findings that I thought were really interesting because I just finished up some of the qualitative analysis, so I wanted to share some of those today. I have disclosures to reveal, my relationships to reveal. Okay, so to give you just a little background about this particular topic, we don't know a lot about intimate partner violence among men who have sex with men or sexual minority groups in general. There's just not a lot of information out there. There's been a number of descriptive studies that have collected descriptive data on this issue. In fact, a literature review came out just last year that was looking at rates of partner violence among men who have sex with men. What we do know is that these various descriptive studies indicate that they experience IPV at rates very similar to heterosexual women. And the rates in the studies that I've looked at vary between 12 and 78%. So that's a huge variation, obviously. And that really is because of how people have been sampled, how people have defined violence, a number of different issues with how these studies have been conducted, because there's been very little consistency in how we have actually defined violence in these studies. But in spite of this, in general, there's actually been a couple newer studies in the last two years that have looked at more population-based studies. One was using the Youth Risk Behavior Survey with adolescent and high school kids. And those showed that the men or boys who identified as something other than heterosexual had much higher odds of being involved in partner violence. There's also a study for the California Health Interview Survey in California that was looking at partner violence and also showed higher rates of violence with men who had sex with men. So we are beginning to look at some population-based studies that actually show there's higher rates in this population than in the heterosexual population. But in spite of all that, we know this now, there's actually not a single evidence-based program that's been developed and tested with any sexual minority group, including men who have sex with men. So the impetus for this particular project was really to explore issues around dating violence with this particular vulnerable population and think about what are some intervention opportunities so that we can kind of close the gap in this. There's also very little data that helps us understand the types of violence and the context of those violence. In fact, I haven't seen a single study that does that. So that's what I wanted to share today, is to kind of give some of the contextual issues around violence with this particular population so that we can better understand what's going on. So the methods for this particular study, as I mentioned, it's a mixed method study. Our young men were recruited using purposive sampling techniques in Los Angeles, in different parts of the city of Los Angeles. The eligibility criteria is here. They were 18 to 25 years of age, African American, Latino, Asian Pacific Islander, or white. Those are the four larger ethnic groups in LA. They also had to have reported being in a primary partner relationship in the last year, when we let them decide what that meant. They also needed to identify as gay, bisexual, queer, homosexual, or have had sex with a man. And we first did focus groups, and I want to explain the methodology a little bit here, because clearly recruiting for partner violence in streets or in clubs and bars where we do a lot of recruitment can't really happen. You can't really ask those types of questions for screening. So we used these criteria here to screen young men for the study and invited them for a focus group. And those focus groups were really designed to just discuss about challenges they had in their relationships, to talk about things that role models that they have, what they want out of relationships, to kind of couch it in that way. After they completed the focus groups, they then completed a survey afterwards where we asked some questions about partner violence and among other things. So it was about a 45-minute survey they completed afterwards. Within that brief survey, we included the CTS, the Conflict Tactics Scale. So we had 101 young men that participated in those activities. Then we also programmed within the survey itself, if they answered yes to a number of different questions about partner violence. They were then invited to do a one-on-one qualitative interview so we could get some of the more contextual information there. So I'm telling you this because it's important to know who these guys are, but also so you can see how the screening process went. And then we had some issues with our IRB actually about how we would actually identify those involved in partner violence, because both the investigators and the IRB had some concerns about, originally we wanted to do dyad interviews where we'd bring in the other partner that was involved. And they had some issues with that, as did I, about safety issues, about coming in, talking about violence. You go home, it's like, what did they ask you? What'd you say? So for this last bit that were involved in the qualitative interviews, what we ended up doing as a compromise was involving men who had reported emotional abuse only. Not to say that's not severe and cannot escalate into something else, but that's the kind of compromise we made with the IRB. Okay. Not to say they didn't talk about physical violence, as you will see, but they didn't report it in the past year. So as I mentioned, we included the conflict tactic scale, which reports, if you're not familiar with that, essentially asks 78 questions asking, I did this, my partner did this to me, on different dimensions of partner violence. So we look at psychological aggression, physical violence, sexual coercion, and injury as a result of any of these. We scored it for both frequency and chronicity. And then our qualitative interviews were coded with some, we used a grounded theory approach, but we also had some a priori codes looking specifically at the partner violence issues, which are more of what you're going to see here. Okay. And also, because I forgot to include my demographics in case you're interested in who these guys are, they are all 18 to 25 years of age. The mean age is about 21.5. 72% identified as gay or other same-sex, and 27% as bisexual. And about half were still living at home with their parents, and I have the other questions about them. I have that. But these are some scores from the psychological aggression question. So I have the individual items listed here. I'm just going to highlight a few of these, some of the higher percentages. Over half reported doing something despite their partner, which kind of things like, oh, it's like tit for tat, I destroyed this because I was mad at him, or I went out with my friends just to get back at him because he made me mad. We also looked at mutual perpetration on the far side here. So you see that there's actually very clear, close percentages to the mutual perpetrations. There's a lot of mutual perpetration of things going on in these relationships. Overall, over 80% reported at least one instance of these types of behaviors in the past year. Now, also, some of these are insulting or swearing, shouting at your partner. I don't know anyone who's been in a relationship that hasn't done one of those things. So we've got to take that with a grain of salt. So looking at some of the qualitative data attached to this to really understand when these types of behaviors are occurring. Young men typically didn't include these types of behaviors for the most part as a part of partner violence or domestic violence. They saw these as kind of more normal parts of a relationship. However, when you actually started probing them and asking them questions about it, actually some men acknowledged that, yeah, that actually can be pretty damaging, and that, you know, the words actually stay with you. Broken bones and bruises heal, but those words can really bring you down after a time. We heard that quite frequently when they really stopped to think about it. But their initial reaction was, it doesn't matter. We saw that typically these types of behaviors occur very early on in relationships and are usually a precursor to more severe forms of violence, is similar to what you would see in heterosexual couples. Here's a quote from one of our respondents. It says, he would just be mean to me, maybe like about image things, like I wasn't attractive, I wasn't smart enough, like that I couldn't understand some of these issues or emotions because I wasn't smart enough. He's like, I don't even know why I'm with you. So kind of similar things that you will hear, kind of putting people down. Respondents also felt that their partners oftentimes used this vulnerability that they had against them. So these are young guys for the most part. Well, they're all youngish. And many of them, this were in their first relationships. And they were for the first time kind of opening themselves up to someone, really sharing information. Maybe their partners were witnessing some of the stuff that was going on in their lives. And some of the young men said they felt that they were really, that when they saw that and shared, that their partners would sometimes use that against them. They would find out information about their family and then use that as tactics against them. Jealousy is the most common reason for verbal aggression, probably not too surprising. What we did see is that social media and technology played a huge part in this, and given the population, not surprising. They would see people taking each other's phones and checking for text messages, or, oh my God, I saw you tweeted this last night, what was up with that? But here's a quote from a young man that says, blames Facebook for some of the issues he got into. He said, and then Facebook got in the way. He had a picture of his body. I asked him to take it down. Then I asked him for his password. So pretty much it started from Facebook, from not giving me a password, from him calling me a bitch, that I'm no good, that I have loose screws in my head. It just escalated to him choking me and then me stalking him, giving him a black eye. It was just dumb, I guess. So these little things would quickly escalate. And that's what we saw a lot, is that most of these instances happen with something really small and insignificant, and in the moment, young men were really not able to control their anger, and it escalates very quickly. Also, we saw this has come somewhat unique to sexual minority populations, is that partners are threatening to out their partner to other family or employers. So here's a quote from a young man that says, what's going to hurt me is you stop my money from coming. And that's what he tried to do in dumb ways, like calling my job and telling them they should random drug test me. Or I used to call my house and tell my grandparents the reason I don't want to come out to them is because I'm scared they're going to cut me off. And he'd talk about our sex life to my grandparents. So kind of just being very inappropriate and reaching out to family and employers. And this is something that is, some of this unique to this population. So looking at some of the physical violence that's occurred, I'm going to highlight a couple of these. We see, you know, little, like 29% slapping their partner, 27% being slapped by their partner, 31% throwing something at their partner, 24% having something thrown at them, 43% pushing or shoving their partner, 37% being pushed or shoved. And again, the mutual perpetration is also relatively high. And this is all past year. Overall, we see that 66%, or 62/3 essentially, experienced at least one of these in the past year. It's very high. And these were not necessarily recruited for being involved in partner violence. This is a sample in the community. And then in parentheses is the number, average number of instances that occurred in the year, so a little over 16 instances per year. So what we see within the physical violence realm is you see a trajectory of smaller incidents often leading to these more severe forms. However, these more severe types of violence were described in about 2/3 of our qualitative interviews, so they're not necessarily as rare, but they did escalate over time. These less severe forms were actually described as very normal parts of a relationship. One young man described them as little pats and slaps and stuff like that. That's just kind of how we relate to each other. In the instances of more severe forms, similar to heterosexual descriptions, we see that young men tended to describe these episodes as being provoked or pushed into violence, that he made me do it. And here's a quote that after that, he was like, I can't believe you fucking hit me. I can't believe you fucking told me that. No one. I have never had to get to that place. Ever since then, that's when the violence started going on. So that one instance, and then it, this young man then continued to describe a cycle of violence within this particular relationship. How most of the time, these fights were started by something dumb, like the prior quote with Facebook, and they usually admitted, yeah, it was really dumb. But something happened to quickly spiral that situation into violence. And a lot of times, the young men said, you know what, I can't really tell you what started that fight, even though we ended up rolling on the floor hitting each other. I don't know what started it. So it is usually very insignificant things that happen. So here's another quote. He was just joking around. He was watching this gay video on TV. He was messing around about how he would love to fuck that one. I just had a really bad day, and I just wasn't having it. So I threw a plate, and it hit his head, and then we started fighting. So little things again. Also, the honeymoon phase that you see in heterosexual couples is very commonly described within these young men's relationships, where the really awful incidents of violence would occur. Then the partner would try to make it up to them, and there would be the honeymoon phase would follow. And here's a quote that describes that a little bit. So he was in the shower. Well, prior to, he had described a day or two before having an awful fight. So put that in perspective. So he was in the shower, and I had a glass of wine. I poured the glass of wine on his hair. I'm thinking it's funny. So I ran out of the bathroom laughing, trying to break the mood from the night before, and he runs out of the shower, and he throws a bottle at me. Busted my whole arm open. I was bleeding so much, it was so scary. And then he went on to say after this incident, his boyfriend treated him really good for about the next month. He would bathe me because I couldn't move my arm because the stitches would rip out. He cooked for me. It was really nice. So, you know, that honeymoon phase of making it up. We also saw that the table showed you a lot of mutual perpetration, but that gets really complicated, and it's also really controversial in many respects, because a lot of times what could look like mutual perpetration is actually more defending oneself. But we did see different typologies of this mutual perpetration. In some instances, it might be two partners that were equally violent. In other instances, it was one partner who was primarily the victim and then just got fed up with it and would lash out. And in some other instances, it was more defense mechanism. So it is very complicated, and kind of teasing that out needs to be done better. Okay, so looking at injury, just to kind of get a sense of what types of injuries resulted from some of these fights, the biggest percentages we see are visible sprains or bruises, so about 20%, a little over 20% had either perpetrated or had a victim of a sprain or bruise. Overall, about a quarter had some type of injury from a fight with their partner, and 3 to 4 instances per year. Okay, so lastly, I want to talk a little bit about sexual coercion, also a part of the CTS. So what we see here is primarily the most common types of sexual coercion is insisting on anal or oral sex without force. We see about 35% both perpetrating and being the victim of that. And I think importantly for this population, given HIV within this population, we see 29% perpetrating, 37% being the victim of insisting on sex without a condom with their partner. This is the population that has the highest HIV rates in the country. And so thinking about how IPV may actually be driving some of those rates is something that we haven't really looked at fully. So with the sexual coercion, it seems to occur when young men are younger. So at the 17, 16, 18, when they're first exploring their sexuality and in their first relationships. Oftentimes they're in relationships with much older men. They feel ill-equipped to advocate for themselves in those situations. And here's a quote. I told him I'm a virgin, and I do not want to have sex until we've been dating for like 1 or 2 months. After a couple weeks, he came over, and we were messing around, and then he kind of like turned me over and kind of like forced himself on me. And I kept telling him, no, I'm not ready. And he's like, no, come on, it's okay. He just like kept ignoring me. Now when I think back on it, would I consider that rape? Not necessarily, I don't know. So because they were dating, similar to what we hear with heterosexual couples, not really sure what to call that. Alcohol or drugs are very commonly involved, not surprising, especially with this population. We saw high rates of alcohol misuse, and then methamphetamines were also sometimes involved with this. And while such instances are relatively common, young men were really hesitant to call it rape, like that quote showed. So in the interest of time, and there's some other points I want to make, but maybe some of the questions, we can get to some of those. Overall, really high rates of all types of violence within this population. There's also a very clear trajectory of violence in their relationships. IPV is typically described as being a part of their early or first relationships when they're first figuring out what it means to be involved in an intimate relationship. So that kind of points to me that there's early interventions are needed to help with anger management and conflict resolution skills. We see these instances are being initiated by something really minor for the most part. So some of these anger management conflict resolution trainings for young men in their teens, tweens, early ages really important to help them learn how to handle this type of stress. How you actually integrate these programs for this population is also a real challenge. It's probably why we don't have any programs right now. Maybe putting more gender-neutral programs in schools would be one approach. Most schools have dating violence curriculum in their classrooms, but they're always heterosexual-based. Sally is dating John, and John's doing this to Sally. If you could take away John and Sally and just make it a little more gender-neutral, that might be effective. Some prior research we've done with this population looking at sex education classes, we see that young men are usually tuning out that information in sex ed because it's not applicable to them. So if it's not applicable, you're not going to listen. So I think the same thing can be said for some of the dating violence. It's not applicable. That doesn't matter. It doesn't happen in my type of relationship. How can it happen with two men? We're equals. So I think we really need to think about how we can program this. Also thinking about, what about social media and its role in all of this? So how do we get kids and young adults to really think about how to manage social media a little bit more? It's not going away. In fact, it's just becoming more and more pervasive in our lives. So if social media is playing such a role in driving some of these instances of violence, what can we do to really address that? There's clearly some implications for HIV, as I mentioned, given the high rates of sexual coercion. And young men aren't seeing this as rape typically. So again, I think more education with sexual minority youth is really important to think that, yes, rape can happen, and just because it's not a man and a woman. Finally, we already know that young men who have sex with men and other sexual minority groups, they already have higher rates of mental health problems than the general population typically. So IPP exacerbates this. So again, it points to the need for better not just better interventions, but interventions in general for this population. And then I mentioned this earlier about the complexities of mutual perpetration or self-defense, and so we really kind of need to delve into that more. Okay. So that's my contact information and questions. We did. We explored. We had questions about, what does it mean to be a man? What is masculinity to you? And that's, we should have a paper in development with that right now. It's really interesting what came out of that. With young men typically describing, using very outdated language, even for heterosexual, just talking about heterosexual relationships nowadays. One of the members of our advisory board said, reading some descriptions, like, this sounds like something from the 1970s, the way that they're describing women, the way they're describing men, and they're using these very traditional gender roles to describe who the man in the relationship is, who the woman in the relationship is, and kind of that power dynamic in the relationship and how that's really negotiated with two men. So it's very, very interesting. So the focus groups were, we didn't really, we talked around partner violence in the focus groups. We talked more about general, like, relationship challenges that they had. We also developed, similar to your cards, we developed some vignettes where people were involved in different circumstances and asked them to discuss those vignettes, but we didn't get into any personal violence. The quotes that you're seeing here are from the interviews. It was, so that's why we did the survey afterwards, and that helped us identify individuals that were more involved in violence.
Why did you decide to do the survey after?
It was more a logistics issue than anything else, because the timing of it, so we didn't want to lose them, and so we thought we would lose time with the focus groups if people took longer with the survey. So it was there's more logistics than anything else, and there's certainly some considerations to think about because some of those topics were brought up in the focus group. So our data might be a little skewed from that. Well, yes, but this is from the quality. So those are other analyses that we've done.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, is there a way that you're accounting for the limitation of perhaps having people in focus?
I mean, there's nothing. I don't think that from a statistical standpoint, there's much we can do from that, but certainly couching it in that way, yes.